We're back with Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. One of the great parts of Irish Fest is the way it reconnects Milwaukeeans to their Irish heritage and features city residents of Irish descent. This year, that'll include a Catholic Milwaukee mother who spent decades working in the barrios of Bogota, Colombia. Ma Mary McCormick led efforts to reach the poor alongside her children and other lay and religious missionaries. Among them was Don Miller, now retired as director of the World Mission Office in Milwaukee. McCormick also inspired people back in Milwaukee to help the less fortunate, like Jackie Maggiore. She and Miller teamed up to tell McCormick's story in the new book, Fluent in Faith, The Gift of Mary McCormick. They'll be doing readings and giving talks about the book at Irish Fest's Literary Corner this weekend. Maggiore tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce how McCormick's early life influenced her view on the poor.
Well, first of all, Mary was raised on a farm in a large family in Wisconsin, and she grew up during the time of terrible drought, so that actually the family was practically starving. So they really experienced the lack of food and tremendous struggle, which forced them actually to leave the farm and move into the big city, which she was about 11 when they came here to Milwaukee. So she witnessed and lived through that kind of a struggle, even though she still remembered the beauty of the farm and the beauty of, you know, living in the country. That was her earliest experience. And then later, because she was widowed at a very young age with seven children and taking care of other children as well, she experienced, you know, the strain of living on almost no budget during the time of the Depression and during World War II and following that. So it was difficult.
What did Mary rely on to get through these difficult times?
Part of it was her intelligence. Mary was a very bright person and very inquisitive. Well, she had this deep interest in learning. And I think that's one of her characteristics that I think throughout her life really opened up opportunities, and she turned it into something that helped her to help others. When she got to Colombia, her creativity in terms of dealing with what most of us would consider very, very difficult situations was there was always a way to do it, or at least she'd try it. And she had also a unique gift of relating to people, of focusing on people. That was Mary's attitude. You know, she was focused on that person who was in front of her. And when she went into the barrios, she just listened intensely.
She's a single mom with still three young girls living at home with her. And she just up and decides to become a missionary in Colombia. Tell us about how she made that decision.
Well, she went to church very often. She lived right across the street from the church. And she was there one afternoon while her children were in school and praying. And then she saw this memo on the bulletin board saying, in case you're interested in being a missionary in Latin America, come to these sessions. And she saw that and she said, well, I'm going to take this. It's just interesting. I don't think it's for me, but I'll just take it and look at it. And that was the beginning. She started to go to these sessions. But when I heard that, I said, well, that goes back to her younger years. She always had this fascination with Latin America. Mm-hmm. Some of her daughters had traveled abroad and studied abroad. And so she had this world view as well. For example, during the Vietnam War, she had this map in the kitchen, and they would follow the evening news, and she would kind of plot where the fighting was going on and all these things. So she had a tremendous sense of the world around her, and I think that also helped her to even open up herself. But she had this also another quality was that she was very daring, I mean tremendously daring, and also very able to respect her children in a unique way. I think most of us parents are more protective of our children, where she somehow or other felt her children would fend for themselves. She was there as a loving caretaker of a sense, but she loved them, but she let them experience life, and that was a tremendous quality that she had. So that's one reason why she could even consider doing that for three children, because I think for her, actually, the initial invitation was that her third youngest daughter wanted to study in Latin America. And so I think Mary saw that, oh, this is an opportunity now for me to realize these dreams that I've had for years.
She admired Dorothy Day so much that I think even before she found this little brochure that invited you to be a lay missioner in Latin America, that she had this desire to be doing more, always to be doing more. And it just seemed natural to her to take this leap. It didn't seem so natural to anybody else, including some of her brothers who would say, you can't do that and take these young girls. And she's, I'm doing it, you know.
How did Mary first get involved with working with the people in the barrio?
Well, in terms of the barrio, that wasn't her first approach. I mean, the initial story when she arrived in Bogota, I mean, here is a woman didn't know any Spanish at all, 56 years old. Through a Colombian friend, she had heard about this hotel. And so she gets there with her three young daughters, and they're just amazed, this old kind of stuffy hotel. But there were only men there. And to short circuit the story, I mean, it was actually had turned into a brothel. And
welcome to Colombia, right?
Welcome to Colombia.
With your daughters.
Yeah. Yes. And so she did have another contact in Colombia who she ended up contacting, and he was able to, within a day, get her out of there. And they ended up into this one apartment, which, you know, some people say it's coincidence. We sometimes call it God incidence because it was the connection, because right next door was this home, this person who had what they call in Spanish internado. It was a school for girls. And so she started to work there with her daughters, and she was teaching English there. That was her first thing. But she loved to discover, and so she was out walking one day, and she actually got lost and ended up into these barrios. Her first work was to work with a daycare center. Most of the women were working as day maids in the houses of the rich. So these mothers either would lock their children in their homes when they were gone. This was a need that they had, was somebody to take care of their children, or maybe they had a neighbor who would take care of them. But there was a tremendous amount of distrust between the neighbors because these people had moved from the rural areas of Colombia into the city, and this is the only place they could find to live. These people had built shacks, and almost all the shacks were one room. Most of them didn't have many windows, if they had any windows, and a whole family would stay in that one room. We call them shacks because they were made out of wood or any other materials that they could put together just to keep the rain out. That was initially how she got into the barrio.
You talked about how the neighbors in the barrios, without some of these programs, distrusted each other.
Yes.
I wonder, how did Mary gain the trust of the people living there as a foreigner, as an outsider? How did she gain the trust of these men and women living in squalor, essentially?
Well, one of the ways that she did this was by her astute listening to people. This initial working in the daycare center was a way to kind of start to establish relationships. And when people came and they expressed their needs to Mary, Mary listened, and then she tried to see how could she respond. In late 1971, early 72, she really started to expand her contacts in the barrio. And I think that the thing that ignited this more than anything else was one day when she was visiting this home and she saw this mother having a bottle and nursing her child with something that looked like Coca-Cola. And Mary, who raised seven children of her own, was just astounded. She found out that this was actually sugar water, but this was prior to WIC, or Women, Infants, and Children program here in the United States. But Mary came up with this on her own, this idea of, well, we have to somehow or other give milk to these mothers before they're nursing, while they're still pregnant, and then we have to help them as pregnant women to have safe deliveries and then to provide milk for them for these babies afterwards. Not that she was opposed to breastfeeding, but a lot of these women, because of their poor nutrition, were unable to breastfeed. This was a program that really took off, and that really started to win the confidence of the people. But Mary wasn't just to do this for them. She charged them a little bit. So if it cost a dollar for this bag of milk, she charged 10 cents.
I want to ask about that because that seemed to be a kind of a running theme that with all of the programs she set up, it was, I think it was one of her daughters said her mom was interested in not giving just a handout, but a help up.
Right, right. And that was a strong belief of hers that that it was more important for the person you're serving to have a participation in it and not just a handout. So I'm amazed. I mean, even the milk program is such an example of how she designed it, really. I mean, I'm thinking she initially thought she was going to come back to this country and study social work and get the credentials. She operated without the credentials. She operated with her own natural ability. And so she designed this program where it wound up requiring the parents to continue to be involved to monitor the infant's weight and after birth and, you know, continued progress. So she set up this whole system to do that. And really, based on her belief that you wanted to respect the dignity of the people that you're serving, and she created that very well.
Another aspect of that was she trained these milk captains. She organized a system so that there were milk captains, and these were mainly young women. One of those that I interviewed when I was writing the book was Maria Ines Villamil, and she was a 15-year-old woman that got pregnant and didn't have hardly any study at all. But Mary saw her capacity as a leader. And so she said, you know, if you want to be a milk captain, you have to continue your studies. And so that pushed Maria to study for herself. And these milk captains then would make sure that the people paid their fees, but also that they were taking care of their children. So Mary would go into the barrio only a couple of days a week, but these were women who were neighbors, and then they could oversee and help their neighbors. And that was a dynamic that, you know, affirmed these women, but also gave them an impetus to even be better at what they're doing. This particular woman, this was 30 years ago that she started this, and she told me, "I cannot live a day without doing something for someone else because Mary taught me that."
Well, Don Miller and Jackie Majore, thank you both so much for coming in and telling us Mary McCormick's story.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jacqueline Maggiore and Don Miller are co-authors of Fluent in Faith, The Gift of Mary McCormick. Jackie will be doing a reading followed by a signing on Friday just before 6 at the Literary Corner. Don will be doing the same at 12:30 on Saturday afternoon. On Sunday, they'll be presenting in the Theater Pavilion near Literary Corner from 3:45 to 4:15 with a signing to follow. The music of Nova Scotia takes center stage this year at Irish Fest, and coming up next, we'll talk with a Cape Breton fiddler and scholar about what makes the music special. You're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM.